The following is a part of the Radio Memphis On Demand service. It originally aired live on Radio Memphis and has been edited for time.
That's Hydrogen for you right here on Radio Memphis. You're tuned into Memphis Metal Mondays with me, Dirty D. That's Suffering out of Ashland, Kentucky. Right before that, you heard Bury the Rest out of Memphis, Lying in Repose. Mine Enemies Fall, Bow to the Pressure, because sometimes that's what happens on a Monday night, right? And kicking that whole set off, you heard Fragile Mortals, Fired Up, all right? And of course, you know, we've been pumping that song out. We've been having a fantastic time with that song. Speaking of Fragile Mortals, as I promised you guys, you know, I told you that I had another Radio Memphis Road Crew Radio Alert, and it's another interview that we're doing for the Road Crew Radio series right here on Radio Memphis. And as it turns out, you know, you guys understand something, and we've always told you, of course, again, it's brought to you by Ken Barr Films, and we're actually trying to bring you some insight because we want our artists, we want our entertainers to understand just what it takes. And all these cool people that we are able to get together and we're able to talk about that are behind the scenes, you know, that make some really cool magic happen. And as it turns out, since we just got done playing some Fragile Mortals and this has kind of worked out this way, Mr. Rob Dukes, all right, he is the current front man for the thrash crossover band Generation Kill, all right? He also shares the lead with hip-hop legend Daryl DMC McDaniels in Fragile Mortals. That's right. You heard him right there. And of course, he's also well known for being the former vocalist for the metal legends Exodus. Now, during a very integral part of that band's career. Now, he himself, you know, he has shared the world stages with a ton of some of the greatest bands and some of the coolest artists of all time. All right. Now, what you may not know about Rob Dukes is that really pretty much before all that really, really got going for him, he left a band that he was a part of in New York. He rode his motorcycle, you know, on a 5-month, 11,000-mile trip to California, having absolutely no idea whatsoever as to what he was going to do. And so, since he was considering, at that time, believe it or not, he was even considering being a scuba diver instructor. As it turns out, he started working as a guitar tech after getting to Hollywood. And you really are not going to believe all the people that he's actually worked for and worked with, you know, as he was making his climb before he got in and on front of the stage and become a front man. And I happen to have Mr. Rob Dukes on the phone with me right now. Hey, honey.
How you doing?
I'm fantastic. How are you?
Sorry, I'm a little late.
No, you're good. You're actually right on time. You know, you couldn't have timed it any better, seeing as that we kicked off, you know, we kicked off that set with you. So you're right on time.
All right.
How about that?
Here's what happened. I got home from work.
Yeah?
I totally forgot. I had my phone on silent. And then I'm sitting there going, I know I got something to do tonight. I forgot what it was. Oh, fucking hell. Oh shit!
Oh, 3:40. You had such a busy time. You had a busy weekend, and you know. And for those of you that have tuned in, I'm talking to Rob Dukes. Look, and you actually got with the guys. You wound up doing a benefit show, and so you've been all over. You like been all over the place, and then you had to race back, come to work, and so yeah, you know, you sit still for a second. You're like, okay, dude, what am I doing?
Yeah, that's basically what I was doing. I was catching up on my. On the Daily Show. I didn't watch it Thursday or Friday, so I was catching up on watching that. So
Good for you. Well, I appreciate you stopping down and taking some time. And as you know, you and I, we got to chit chat, you know, for a few minutes. And as of course you heard me as I was introducing you, that ultimately the reason why I wanted to sit down and talk with you is this is part of the Radio Memphis Road Crew Radio series that we're doing. And you know, you not only being the awesome person that you are, and being the cool front man, you know, and actually rocking the stages and rocking the planet with some of the coolest people, you have some insight, you know, and your journey and your experiences, you know, speak volumes. And, you know, I kind of wanted to get in that with you if you got some time.
Cool. Yeah. I do have the time.
You do have the time. Perfect.
I do. Fire away.
One of the things, you know, Rob, one of the things that I appreciated about you, and I think I told you this the other night when we were on the phone, I absolutely adore your free spirit, and your spirit scares the absolute teetotal hell out of me. And I just want you to know that, because you're that dude. You're like, man, screw it. I'm just going to go, and I'm just going to go do this. And it doesn't matter. So, and ultimately, this is what it brings around to where I figure we kind of start the story. You know, first and foremost, how you got started as far as in music. And if you don't say it out loud, I'm going to go ahead. We're going to go to band camp together if you don't go ahead and admit it to me.
Right. My introduction, my mom has a picture of me, or my dad has a picture of me. I'm like four, and I got these big, huge, clunky headphones on.
Oh, nice.
And I'm just sitting in front of an old, vinyl record player, just listening to music. And I'm just a kid. I'm just a little kid. As a young kid, my uncle was a musician, but I just knew that he was. And he had gave me a couple records, and I didn't like any of them. He gave me Yes, and he gave me the Grateful Dead.
Oh, wow.
And I didn't like any of them.
Okay.
And so my mom had Dark Side of the Moon, and I stole my mom's copy of Dark Side of the Moon.
And serious.
My dad had Hendrix and the Doors, and so I got heavily into the Doors and Hendrix and Led Zeppelin and then Black Sabbath. Pink Floyd was there all along. I ended up liking all Pink Floyd.
Wow.
And then I was about 8 years old or 9 years old. I mowed lawns all summer, and I shoveled driveways in the winter for money so I could go to the record store and buy my own records. And the first record I ever bought was Queen, News of the World.
Oh,
and The Clash, White Riot, and London Calling, and I bought those. And I have those framed that are in my, I still have those today, framed
nice.
On the wall in my house. I still listen to them, like once a month, once every couple months, I'll sit and I'll just listen to them in their entirety. Those albums mean so much to me. And
that is insane. I would have not have known that.
What's that?
I said I would have not have known that about you, about those two albums. That's cool as hell. That is very cool.
And I remember playing CBGB's years ago with this ska kind of punk reggae band I was in.
Oh, nice.
I played guitar in it, and we played CBGB's, and I actually had to turn around from the crowd and kind of look in my amp, and I got all misty-eyed because I was like, dude, fucking Joe Strummer played here, man. Fucking, the fucking Ramones played here. Like, all my idols played here, and I'm standing here playing myself. And I just never,
wow.
You never think that that's what you're going to do. You know what I mean? You kind of hope for it, but you don't actually ever. And then when you're finally standing there, you're like, oh, fuck, this is awesome.
I'm standing
there.
And
I got overwhelmed by it. And, so it choked me up. And of course, my band made fun of me. And
Well,
fuck you. I had a moment.
I know. I want to get to my sensitive side. Stop it. It's one of those. So you're mowing lawns. You're doing all the side jobs. You're buying all these albums. You get into it. I mean, ultimately, you go in. How do you get into your first band?
I'll never forget. I was playing my guitar. It was summertime, windows are open, and this dude was driving by. This guy, I knew who he was. His name was Mike, and I didn't know him yet, but I knew who he was. He was older than me in school.
Okay.
And he stopped, and he turned his car off, and he listened. He was sitting in his car outside my house. And I just started playing, and I turned it up a little bit, and I played a little bit more. And the next day, he came up to me and said, "Hey, man, let's play together." And I was like, okay. And
sure.
And that was it. Me and him, we started jamming together. Me and him really liked to drink more than anything. We did play. And, but we weren't, me and him were more forced, more focused on drinking, smoking weed, and listening to music more than playing it.
Well,
that was kind of how our friendship went.
So that wasn't like the total first, like total gig that got you into playing per se. So
no, I mean, I wasn't very good. I wasn't very good. It took me a long time to learn stuff, and I'm a very mediocre guitar player. I think my guitar playing focused toward punk rock because punk rock was a little easier, and he wanted to do really complex metal stuff, and I just couldn't do it. So
I see.
I didn't know that I could sing until later. I always thought that I could. I you know, in the school, in middle school, I sang in the chorus.
Yes.
I actually sang Fool on the Hill, an a cappella Beatles song.
How nice.
And then I sang in the chorus, and I also I played all the brass instruments. I played the trumpet and the baritone horn and
how
the French horn.
Fun.
And I kind of did that, and I liked art, and I liked music, and I didn't like anything else. I didn't like languages, I barely got by in school because I just did the bare minimum.
Right.
You know, I didn't really, nothing, you know what really interested me?
What's
reading
that?
Reading books by people that I liked.
That did this
the
stuff.
They read. You know what I mean?
Oh, okay.
Like I was reading Jack Kerouac when I was 14.
Because, wow.
Jim Morrison had mentioned his name, so I went and got all his books. I read all his books.
Ah.
I was reading Henry Miller because someone had mentioned his name, and I read all of Henry Miller's books. And, I'd read some I didn't watch a lot of TV growing up. I really wasn't in my house that way. I could watch the Muppet Show, but it really, you know, I was more focused on reading. I built models and I spent most of my time alone. I didn't have brothers or sisters. I was an only child.
I gotcha.
So,
when you were doing the reading thing, and you were trying to read all of those books that those, if Jim Morrison said something about, you know, said person, were you trying to read those books so that you could see stuff through his eyes?
I don't really know. I read them because they were like, oh, these, like, I remember this book, you know, he said, you know, Kerouac opened my eyes to another world. So I was like, okay, well, if you did it for him, maybe I'll do it for me.
Ah,
you know what I mean? So
I see.
You know, like, I thought maybe I could gain some knowledge from these books that these people are reading. And you know, I read all the classics too at the same time. I was a prolific reader. I read pretty fast. I can read a book in a couple of days. And
nice.
You know, I can read three or four books at one time, and I can my comprehension of them is, I can separate them. You know what I mean?
Yes.
I've always done that. I do that to this day.
I love the picture you sent me because you look so smart, and you're sitting like, you know, outside.
I'm going old and I wear glasses.
You were sitting outside, yeah. And you had this whole intellectual. I was like, wow, Rob, dude.
Come on, I'm like this.
That was sexy. Like it was sexy.
I'm the guy from Twilight Zone. If I get locked in a library at the end of the world by myself, I could finally read and I'd break my glasses.
I saw you in a totally different light, man. I was like, dude, man, he looks smart as hell. What does he know? See, now I want to read what you're reading because maybe I will think like you do.
Right now, man. Right now, there's I'm reading Sam Harris, man. Sam Harris is fucking brilliant, man.
Oh,
he's this brilliant writer. He wrote this book called Waking Up, and it really does. It wakes you up from the
that's scary.
From your monotony, and he makes you. He's just awesome, you know. He has another one called The Loss of Faith. It's so good, man. He's like, I read them all. I have them all, and I'm reading them one by one.
Good for you, man. I'm so inspired by you now. See, that's why you needed to call me, man, because I needed you today. I needed you.
I'm reading another one called Tyranny. It's about...
Ooh, I think I've heard that one.
It's a short book. It's a small book. It's a pocket book, actually.
Okay.
But it's just basically the outlines of how tyranny starts, of how oppressive the masses starts. And I'm reading that, and I'm reading The History of Everything. So.
Oh, damn.
This book called The History of Everything, right? It explains.
Okay.
In context, things that you don't really understand, like you wouldn't really think about in just an offhand way. So. Like when you see like a solar system scale, like
right.
You see the sun and then you see like the planets in a line and how, you know, they're all kind of like, you know, within a pretty much immediate space within each other. Right.
Right.
Well, that you couldn't be further from the truth. I mean, it is things are so far, like, like far.
Okay? Like really super far.
Like the distance between, like, Jupiter and Saturn, it would take you, like, 16 years to fly there in the fastest vehicle that we have.
Well, hell, that make it look like you're just going to jump on over there, right?
It's like, incredible how... And I just started reading that one, and it's really something you got to read real slow, and you got to do it in piecemeal, and, you know, and there's not enough hours in a day. I mean, yeah. I've heard that most... smart people read a couple hours a day, and I try to read about an hour a day. If I, you know,
I guess
my goal would be three. It would be wonderful, but I get about an hour. You know,
it's nothing wrong with
depending how hard my day was. Sometimes less, I fall asleep reading. So I pretty much fall asleep reading every night. So.
Well, that's okay. That's totally okay. We'll see now. I'm learning so much about you. You know, before I even ask you all the other stuff, I want to ask you. I'm wanting to read these books, and now I'm wanting to like the history of everything. Okay, I think would just like blow my mind. And you know,
I will go off on huge tangents, so you have to reel me in. So make sure you focus on the questions.
Yeah,
reel me in when I get out there.
What are you talking about, man? You're just giving me ammo. It's all good. So we're reeling you back in. You done course, okay? You're talking about reading, and this is where we sidetracked because you were talking about growing up not having TV and you know and having all these books and you know and all of this stuff. You know, you jumped in the band, okay, with dude that really wasn't your bandmate because all you did was
we just came drinking buddies,
right?
And I didn't really join a band until I was in my probably like mid to late 20s.
Oh,
I mean,
really?
I kind of played guitar, and I knew people when I played, but I never really played in a band. I just didn't. I was 25, 20 years old when I met my first. I met my friend Craig, who I still play with music today. It's 25 years later, almost,
oh, wow.
And we're still writing songs together and playing together. We're actually working on a record right now. He's my drummer. So I met him, and he had a cable access TV show.
Okay.
And needed a theme song. So I wrote the theme song with him, and we recorded it on a four track with horrible 57 mics. And an open room. And he had this cable access show, and he did some funny shit, and we made some videos that were fucking, I mean, I'm embarrassed about them now. Jesus Christ, they're so bad.
No, they're gold. They're gold.
Yeah, they're gold. So, you know, but I was, you know, so me and him started playing. He was really the first band. We got a bass player, and we did a handful of shows, and we recorded a record where we've recorded a record actually first. I played the bass and the guitar and the vocals, and he played the drums, and we wrote 10 songs, and we did these, and we did a couple cover songs.
Okay.
And then we played live, and we learned all these cover songs. We could play like two originals and then a cover to kind of keep people's attention. And then we do two songs and a cover, and we kind of disperse covers just to kind of keep people's attention so we could play one of our own songs.
Absolutely.
And then, you know, that was kind of how we did it. Me and him did that for a couple years. And then I kind of I went back to school, and I got a degree in computers. I got my MCSE in computers, and I started working at first I worked at IBM.
Oh wow!
And then I worked at an insurance company, Blue Cross Blue Shield, and I was working in the data center, and I was working there, and I worked there for a couple of years. And during this time, I was drinking coffee, at a coffee shop, and on the street, and on a Sunday.
Oh wow!
And this dude was wearing a snowboard shirt, and I was a prolific snowboarder at the time. I snowboarded constantly during the winter.
Well, yeah.
And he was wearing a snowboard shirt, and I said, "Hey, man, I like that company, man. They're awesome." And we just started talking, and he goes, "Oh, let's go fucking snowboard." And I was like, "All right." And it's like July.
Okay.
So he gives me his number, and I don't see him. So the first good snowstorm happens, and I call him up, and I'm like, "Hey, man, let's go snowboard."
You remember me from July, right?
And he goes, "I'm the dude from July." He goes, "Oh yeah, yeah, okay, let's go." And we fucking drove up, and we hit it off. And he was in a band, and he was in this band. And he asked me, he said, "Hey man, my I really like my guitar player to learn how to play like reggae and ska." And I go, "It's very easy, dude. It's probably the easiest of the music genre to play."
Right.
And I said, I'll come over and show them. So I went over there and I showed them. And then they asked me to join the band. And I said, okay, yeah, fuck, I'm not really doing anything else. So, you know, sure. I'll do this. I said, I have a regular job. So anyway, so we did it for fun. And we had a good time. And we actually made a record. Don't really talk to those guys anymore. I reconcile that they kind of acted like dicks toward the end. And whatever, it doesn't matter.
Okay, whatever.
So I'm in this band. Right, we play a bunch of shows. We have a little bit of a following. It's going pretty good. And then they decided to get another guitar player and replace me.
Okay.
And which at the time I actually didn't really care. It wasn't like it was a big deal. I was like, okay. So that was when I made the decision that, you know what, man, I think I'm gonna move to California, man. I think I'm gonna leave New York for a little while.
See, that's what tripped
me
out.
That's what I did.
That's what tripped me out was because you literally you sat there, and for those of you that have tuned in, I'm talking to Mr. Rob Dukes, Radio Memphis, Road Crew Radio Series, and of course we're gonna get into his head about how he was able to do stuff behind the scenes. I read this. Obviously, I stalked you. Of course, I have to, and read a couple stories about you and stuff. And I see this, and you ultimately, of course, you confirmed this with me on the phone the other night that you were like, I'm done. Screw it. I'm out the door. I'm just going to go ride and I'm just going to move. And it was, you literally just left your life as is there and left.
Yeah. I got it. I worked. I ended up, the company that I worked for went out of business. They went out of business. So I got a job with his carpenter. And so I was working with a carpenter for like 2 months. And we did two really big jobs. And so what I did was I said, hey, man, I don't want to get paid. I want you to save all of it till the very end for 2 months. So
wow.
I said, I just want enough to get through. I said, all my bills are paid. I'm good, man. I want the money to travel with. And he was cool about it right up until the very end. Then he was a total dick because he had to hand me like fucking $4,000 in cash. And it was like,
well, you should. you owed it to him. Yeah,
he was pissed. He was like, I could see it on his face that he was mad. That I was like, fuck, man. But I was like, I'm leaving. And I don't think anyone really thought I was going to leave because I was like, they're like, how? What are you doing? I go, I'm getting on my motorcycle and I'm leaving. And I had this GSXR 750. I had this fucking motorcycle. It was a sport bike. It wasn't even a Harley or a. It didn't have any bags on it. It had nothing. I had a tank bag on it, and right. I had another bag on the back, like bungee corded to the seat behind me, and that was it. And I just got on this bike. I had full leathers, and I smoked cigarettes at the time, so I would pull over like every hour and a half and get gas and smoke a cigarette and drink coffee and. And I stopped at random tattoo shops, and I had lunch in weird cities, and I rode in rain, I rode at night, I stayed at these weird hotels, and
wow.
I at one point I don't think I even talked to anyone for like a week. This is like pre-cell phone, so I had a cell phone, but you would buy a cell phone with a prepaid card, and that
right.
was kind of, you would just use it when you needed it, and
right.
I never needed it. I just never, I don't even think I charged it up.
Wow.
So I left and I just rode around the country. I just rode and I rode and I rode, and about 4 months later I arrived in Los Angeles, and my friend Jason, who plays bass in Ministry right now, said, hey man, you could stay at my place. I'm not even there. He was out on the road with some band.
Okay.
And I said, okay. And me and Johnny Chow plays bass in Stone Sour, was
yep.
working the door at the Viper Room, and I parked the bike, took a shower, put my bags in the house, went over to the Viper Room, and me and Johnny hung out and had some Red Bulls and bullshitted for a couple hours, and then I said, all right, I'll talk to you later, man. And I see Johnny periodically every now and again. He's still my friend to this day. He's playing the Stone Sour, which is fucking awesome.
It
he was
is.
Playing and
it is.
doing a Soulfly and stuff. So he was, we've all. Jason got Ministry. He's out with Prong right now, filling
right.
in for the guy who had to go home.
Right.
So, we were all just dudes hanging out. Like, these are just people I met. I didn't really know them before, so
well,
now they're just regular people. So
it's funny because
I got a job.
Yeah,
at the Viper Room. No, at the Key Club was my first job.
Oh, okay.
I got a job. loading in bands, and it was like $150 a night to load bands in, and you had to be there from like 3 to like 6. Wow. Then you had to come back at like 12. You know what I mean? So you know, so when I first started doing it, I was just doing the Key Club, and then I figured out through all the other guys that I worked with that you could do multiple load-ins if they had different times. So you could do, I could do the Avalon at like 2 and then split from there and go to the Key Club and do, you know, the Key Club, and then I could fly over to the El Rey and fucking do that or whatever. And I was doing that on a regular basis. So I was making pretty good money, man, for, you know, just bouncing around LA, hanging out in clubs and bars.
And doing the load-ins and stuff like that.
I don't drink or do drugs, so it was kind of like I would just kind of hang out and work and just, you know, I was always reliable because I showed up. And all the druggies and the drunks, they get drunk and they don't show back up.
And that was the biggest thing.
That was kind of the downside. So I was kind of like the upside of that. So that led to doing Coachella.
Oh, wow.
And the Warped Tours and work and meeting people in that scene. So I started working in that scene.
I got you.
Of working with bands and working on certain clubs. And I was working at the Dragonfly. At first, I was a bar back, and then I became a bartender.
Right.
And then, I built the stage there, because using my carpentry skills, and I built the stage that's still there. AC/DC shot a video there.
And funny. And you can say
called the owner. I was like, dude, yeah. So, and through that, I met my friend Todd. My friend Todd lives in L.A. still, and he was friends with Dave Navarro and said, hey, man, Dave needs a tech. And I said, okay. So I went and I got my first tech gig was with working with Stevie D with Buck Cherry. I went out with Buck Cherry.
That's crazy.
It was actually called Josh Todd at the time. It wasn't even Buck Cherry because it was kind of, he was like in between.
He couldn't decide at that time, right?
Yeah. So Buck Cherry had like broken up and he was still doing his own thing. And so I went out with them for like 3 weeks and it was fun. I had a good time. I was a horrible tech. I didn't really, they kind of taught me what to do at that point because I didn't really know what I was doing.
That was the thing you told me too. You showed up and you were like, you realize I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah. And they were like, oh, well, just do this and this and this. I go, oh, okay, I can do that. Yeah. You know what I mean? I mean, I'm a guitar player. I can string a guitar and tune it and whatever. And just, you know, fucking, anyway, so I learned the hard way that, so I did that, and then I came home and I worked for Dave for a while.
Oh, wow.
Doing Camp Freddy, was doing all this stuff, and that led me I worked with Jerry Cantrell, and I worked with Billy Duffy from the Cult.
That is so crazy.
And then I got a call, and it said, hey, man, the Megadeth tour needs a guitar tech for the tour. It's 6 weeks and you got to leave tonight at midnight. And I was like, okay. So I finished the gig I was on and I went home, showered, packed a bag of clothes. And they were like, oh yeah, you're going to Canada too. So grab your passport and your coat. And I'm like, I don't even fucking have a motorcycle jacket. I don't even have a coat. You know? So I just showed up on the bus and I, you know, got a coat at a Walmart down the road or whatever. And so I jumped on the bus and I said, oh, you're going to ride with Exodus. They're the opening band.
Oh,
and I was
wow.
like, oh, awesome. I fucking love that band. So I got a fucking band. And I was like, oh, Exodus, I fucking love it. So I get on the bus and Gary and Rick are sitting there. I was like, dudes, I fucking love you guys, man. They're like, fuck yeah, man, fuck. They're all drinking and fucking partying. And I was like, dude, I was at that gig in 86 when the fucking stage collapsed, man. That was my friends, man. That was me, man. I was there. We caused all that shit. We were throwing bottles at the cops. And
oh, my God.
Fire. And they're like, no way. I'm like, yeah, man. I was like, look, that show was crazy. And it was fucking.
And they remembered that.
Right then and there. That was it. So.
That was it.
And I worked for Exodus for that whole tour, 6 weeks. I was on that tour. They said I was one of the best techs they've ever had.
How funny.
And then from that tour, I jumped on a Satyricon tour, and Joey Jordison was playing drums on. It was Satyricon. It was we were doing the States and Canada, and we were the band playing the next night when Dimebag got shot.
Oh,
that
you're
show got canceled
kidding.
The next night. If you ever see the documentary on EH1,
yeah,
you look at they show the club and you look at the marquee and it shows Satyricon on it
I've watched the documentary, you know, a ton of times I remember when it happened, you know.
Yeah, and, I do too, and man, we were all that we was it sucked. We're on our way there.
Because
we were driving
smokes.
To the club to fucking be there the next day, and it was like, oh man, this is fucking crazy. And
wow.
So on that tour ended in Canada really horribly. The two guitar players got accused of rape, and they didn't rape anyone, but they got accused of it. And the cops came on the bus and arrested them and put them in jail for months. And holy smokes! Finally, the girl admitted she was lying, and they let everyone go.
Kidding.
It was crazy. But I went home. Like, they got arrested, and the rest of the bus were like, "All right, let's get the fuck out of here, man. Fuck." We ended up going to jail for shit we didn't do.
Right.
And so I went home. And I was home. Actually, I didn't go back to L.A. I actually went to New York, and I was with my buddy Lenny, and we were planning a motorcycle trip, like a long motorcycle trip. Me and him, we've been planning it for years. So I was staying with him for Christmas, so once in a while. So I flew to New York, and I stayed with him and his family at the time, and I got a call on Christmas Eve. I was getting tattooed. And
what were you getting a tattoo of? What were you getting a tattoo of on Christmas Eve?
I don't remember. I don't remember.
Okay.
I just remember I was getting tattooed.
Okay.
And I asked the guy, I said, "Hey man, can you stop? And just give me 5 minutes. I got to take this call," because I looked at my phone.
Right.
And it was Gary Holt was calling me. So I was like, "Let me just take this call." And he's like, "All right, cool." And I went outside and I took the phone call, and Gary was like, "Hey man, Merry Christmas. I just wanted to say hey." And we're all fucking here and fucking hanging out, and we were like, "Hey man, do you want to audition to be the singer of Exodus?" I'm like, "Fuck yeah."
That is crazy. That is great. That's just right off the bat. So this whole time, up until you get asked to audition for Exodus, this entire time you've been teching, and you've been just going from group to group, right?
I was just a road crew guy. I was just a guy on the crew. So I loaded in, loaded out. I hung out, you know. I was just a guy. I was just a regular guy. I'm like, yeah, fuck, I'll try it, whatever. Oh, but let me backtrack.
So okay.
The last night of the Exodus tour, they asked me to come up and sing, and I did. I went up and I sang, what's the first song on Fabulous Disaster? I don't remember the song. The fuck is that song?
Oh, you better think about it. What is it? Oh, my God.
It's not Fabulous Disaster. It wasn't. It was the one where the guys, I'll have a salad with baked potatoes. Oh, the fuck is that song? What was that? God damn it. Hold on. I'll find it. I got some CDs right here.
Okay.
Okay. Oh, it was, let me get my glasses. Hold on. Get my glasses on.
Get your smart look going. Come on.
I sang, oh, these are all Japanese. They don't have the titles.
Oh, my damn.
It was on... I can't remember if it was on Fabulous Disaster or Pleasure of the Flesh. Anyway.
Okay.
Maybe one of your fans will look it up or something.
Yeah, no doubt.
It was the song where the guy opens up and he goes, he says something about eating salad. And I sang that song.
Okay.
And I had a blue mohawk, because I had mohawks all the time. So I had a blue one at this point.
Okay.
When I first got on the bus, it was pink. And I dyed it blue during the tour.
Right.
I'm guitar teching, and I got my guitar tech box and all my tools, and I'm pretty good at it at this point. I'm getting better. And when they say, "Come out and fly out and do this," and I go, "Okay." So I fly out, I fly home to L.A., and I got on my motorcycle. And I rode up the coast.
Wow.
Yeah, that was what I did. I rode up the coast. Took 2 days. I stopped like halfway up the coast by Hearst Castle and got a hotel. And
right.
I just kind of rode up Route 1, which rides all the way from like it doesn't go from Los Angeles. It goes actually more from like Malibu. You get on Malibu because from Los Angeles to San Diego is you can't really drive on the coast. You drive on the 5 or the 101.
Right.
But anyway, go up the coast and I ride up the, it's just an awesome ride, and get there and they show up and the first day I'm horrible, man. I can't remember any of the words and the fucking, you know, stumbling and just, I was nervous and I was just self-conscious and like, fuck. And then the next day they said, well, you know what? Let's do it again tomorrow. We'll come back and we'll, you know, you'll try again. So I just, all I did was I listened to War. This is my Shepherd all night. And I was like, let's do War. And
okay.
I walked in and I fucking killed it. And
they, nice.
And they were like, cool. So they didn't give me any answers or anything. They were so, we're, you know, trying out some other people and shit. I was like, all right, man, I'll see you guys later. And I left and went back home. And Gary called me a week later. He's like, dude, you going to NAMM? And I'm like, yeah. He's like, cool, meet us there, man, because we have this signing thing. And come hang out. I was like, oh, okay.
Mm.
So I was there. We met my friend Jen. She's the bass player of L7.
Okay.
Me and her went down, and we were hanging out. And we were with Al Jorgensen and her and a couple other people. And we, I was like, oh, let's go to the Exodus signing. So we all kind of went there. And Dio was there. I fucking smoked a cigarette with Dio.
Oh, wow.
Because I still smoked at the time. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And Al was tripping on acid and drinking wine and spilling it everywhere. And being all weird because he was tripping and nobody else was. He was tripping by himself. It was fucking awesome. And we get there and Gary was like, hey, man, we want you to be the singer of Exodus. And I was like, no shit.
At NAMM.
All right, cool.
And
that was it.
That was it. That was crazy.
I shared a cigarette with Dio and Al Jorgensen at the Fender booth. And we signed a bunch of stuff. And then I went and hung out. We all went and went to watch Megadeth together. And then,
That sounds like stuff out of a movie.
Yeah, so we went and then I went home. I went home to LA and I lived with Jen at the time. It was me, Jen, and my friend Jeff.
Uh-huh.
Who, these people I'm still friends with now. These are all, ended up being like really close friends. I mean, we still speak on a regular basis, you know, because I was just, regular guy, man. I was just a regular dude, you know. I was just, you know, I didn't really, you know, I didn't, honestly, didn't have any aspirations to do any of the things I done.
Well, you
know,
I did in my head. You did in your head, but not in reality. So this whole entire time, like I said, you're teching and stuff, but obviously, and road crewing it, you obviously are doing some things that that get you there. You obviously are doing the right things that get you there. Half of it was probably not doing the drugs and not drinking and stuff, so that you wound up having, you know, the right mind half the time, and, you know, ultimately, by default, it's what it sounds like, you won the gig because you had your brains about you, you know?
Well, I think if someone were to ask me, like, dude, if I wanted to be a tech, what do I do? And I'd be like, well, first it has to be first. Like a lot of techs I know, and look, I know a lot of techs at party
mm-hmm.
that are really successful, man. My friend Bubs, man, Darren is fucking, he's a partier from fucking, he's one of the biggest partiers I know. He works for some of the biggest bands in the world.
Nice.
Because he just does it first. He does his job first, and then so he is very, you know, he functions highly, you know, at a high level too.
Oh, absolutely.
And I knew people that just couldn't do both, man. Like we Exodus went through many techs that just couldn't fucking hang, man. They you get close to the band and you drink with the band, but the band doesn't have to wake up till fucking time to go on next stage. Like, they don't have to get up at 6 in the morning,
sure,
or 7 in the morning and load gear, or, like, you know, they don't have to, like, the band, like, we didn't do that anymore. Like, you know, I remember I would have, sometimes in Europe, I would have a tough time sleeping, and I remember calling my buddy, I go, dude, I can't fucking sleep, man. He's like, dude, fucking help load the gear in and out. You'll fucking sleep.
You'll go right to bed.
So that's what I did. And you know what's it's weird too. Even when I was in the band, there were a few things that I was always aware of. I was always aware of how hard they worked. You know, and I always I did break balls, but in the friendliest of ways. You know what I mean? I gave them a hard time in the friendliest of ways.
And, of course.
You know, I had our guy, this guy Kevin, He was he hardly ever remembered, but I would fucking run it, like right before I go on stage, I'm fucking amped out of my head. Like I'd start pacing and then start screaming and I'd just start pacing and I'd just trying to, cause you're about to go fucking, you know, try to go out and make people kill each other. It's kind of the deal with, you know, being a singer. You're about to go be a performer and do a show, and I just would amp myself up. I'd run and I'd fucking jump up and down and I'd scream, and as I'd go running by, Kevin would hand me my microphone, and I'd fucking, as I'd grab it, I'd fucking tap him in the nuts. I'd give him a nut tap. The back of my hand, just flat.
Yeah. And that was supposed to make it all right.
Yeah, like 400 shows, man, and he never fucking figured it out till like the end. He started blocking me and stuff, and like, and the microphone was over his back of his shoulder, you know what I mean? So yeah, well, you know, they it was awesome, man. There's so many cool things, like they'd write stupid shit on my set list and fucking, you know, like we'd torture the other bands. I bought this fucking magazine one time. It was like 70 plus porn, and it was like a magazine.
The hell?
It was like just old gross old ladies.
Why would you
and
do
I
that
fucking bought that. And I fucking cut all the pictures out and I taped them all over the monitors and the drum sets and the amps of Creator. So, and they were all on the floor. So when they went out on stage, that's all they saw were these old gross pictures. Oh, it was so funny. They were so mad at me for that. They actually cut us off.
I'd be mad at you. I'm a lady.
Dude, every night, fucking Millie would yell out, "Who's your favorite German band?" And I would yell out from the side of the stage, "The Scorpions!" Yeah,
you're that guy.
I used to drive that guy crazy. So here's the deal. I worked real hard as a tech, but I hung out with the band, but the job was first. That was kind of how it was. And as a singer, at the end of the night, man, I always walked around and thanked every one of my crew with a handshake and said, "Thank you for your work, man." And they were always, you know, and I still ate breakfast with them and I'd fucking go hang out with them and I was still part of the crew more, you know, I was part of the band, but I was, you know, I was just nice to everybody. Why not be nice to everybody? I've seen a lot of people in that little bit of, a little bit of strange power that you have be real dicks, and there's no fucking reason for that whatsoever.
There's no reason.
I was stage diving into the crowd until my last show and hanging out and shaking hands and taking pictures, and you know, because I was always grateful for it. I was always grateful for the opportunity to do that. I was never a dick about it, regardless of how big the show was or how small it was. I mean, there were some shows that were just miserable.
Well, sure. And that comes with the territory.
But, you know,
that comes
you
with
know,
the territory.
And then some shows are fucking great, so, you know, but, you know, being a tech was awesome, and then, if, you know, I don't think I could do it again, but it wouldn't be a horrible job, it'd be a good job.
It would be.
I mean, especially if you work for a cool band. If you work for a bunch of dicks, it's not really a fun, you know.
Well, if you work for a bunch of asses, it's not, no job is fun. Are you talking, you know, when you talk like it like that. I love your attitude, Rob. And those of you that have been tuned in and have been talking to, I'm Rob Dukes. And you had just a very cool outlook. You have a very cool way of putting it all in the box. And ultimately, at the end of the day, I mean, you seized it. You know, you carpe diem is what you did. Now, what's even cooler, though, too, is that you're not done. You know, you're doing some real... I just got done playing a very cool song from you, Fragile Mortals. Jen Gill, you know, is also yours. You know, where it's
the thrash. Did you get the other one, Saya?
Do what now?
Did you get the email I sent you?
No.
I thought I sent you another one.
No, because I was so like waiting on that email. I want to play some of that. I need some of that.
All right, well, I'll send you something else so you can play some a couple other things, yeah. So.
Absolutely, I will.
No, man, I'm working on a record right now. We're like halfway through it. We've changed as a band. It's not that we're trying to change. We just have changed.
Sure.
You know, it's weird. It's we started out with this one thing, and remember the show, the metal show with Eddie Trunk and those guys.
Yeah.
With Don Jameson and Jim Florentine. So they asked us to play their Christmas party a couple years ago.
Okay.
And we. So what we did was, they were like, "Oh, we want you to..." So we didn't play Jen Kill. What we did was we learned like 20 cover songs. And we learned a bunch of their favorite songs.
I see.
So, and it was all secretive, so they didn't know. So they just show up, and all of a sudden, we opened up with Van Halen. They're like, what the fuck?
What's going on?
And we played Judas Priest, and we played Van Halen, and we played fucking Motorhead, and we played fucking, it was awesome. We played Kiss, you know, none of, you know, and so, but in the interim, so what we did was we learned all these other songs, and then that kind of led to allowing us to take all this, and it was a lot of songs that we never would have learned or played,
right,
or bands we would have ever, but it changes you. It changes your playing. It changes your outlook. It changed, you know, changed us. And then, so then we meet Daryl, and we start working with Daryl. And the first song we wrote with Daryl was just to be a one-off. It was supposed to be one song for his record. Okay, thanks, man.
That's all right.
And the song was so fucking weird and cool. We're like, God damn, this song's fucking killer.
Wow.
He was like, oh, let's write another one. And I was like, okay. So we wrote a couple more, and then we just kept going. And we just, next thing you know, we had an album. Well, the album is in all honesty, metalheads are going to fucking hate it. And rappers are going to fucking hate it.
Not necessarily.
So we've alienated everyone that likes me and the music that I've done or my bands have done. And people that like Daryl are going to be like, what the fuck is Daryl doing? Like, this is... So we've really alienated everyone that we...
I don't think so. And for those of you who... if you guys haven't clued in on you know, who Rob Dukes is talking about, Daryl DMC McDaniels, yes, the DMC from Run,
right,
DMC, you know, is part,
yeah,
of this outfit. And, you know, and here's the thing. I mean, you have to understand something, what's going on as far as with music. You know, there's been a lot of crossover, not just thrash and metal and hip-hop and all of that. You know, there's been crossovers as far as in other genres and things like that. That's a thing, okay? And, you know, one of the other things also, too, if you guys get a lot of this stuff together, you know, there's going to be a certain group of people that are going to be all about it. They're the ones that are the viral ones that are all into those video games. They're the viral ones that are into the cosplay. They're the viral ones that are into, you know, all of the virtual reality, you know, and things like that.
Right.
Man, dude, you're fine. Stop it. Quit thinking like that. Stop it. you're on the mark.
Yeah, when we did it, we were like, oh, not do this or let's do that. We just kind of like, what do you want to write about?
No, oh, hang on, baby, you're cutting out a little bit.
Okay.
Hello.
I can move.
There you are.
That's better.
That's it. That's perfect.
All right.
Okay.
So when we first got together, we didn't write about. We didn't say, well, let's. You know, what do you want to write about? I was like, I want to write a song about lot lizards. And he was like, what's a lot lizard? And I'm like, that's like a truck stop hooker, man. And he's like, I didn't even know anything about that. So I started telling him, like, I read all these stories, and I read a couple books, a couple videos I've seen. And anyway, so we did a little bit of research, and we just started, so that's what we wrote about. And the music kind of was like kind of cool, and we didn't really like. We weren't really focusing on staying away from anything or adding anything or taking anything away.
Right.
Basically, the music was written. Me and my guitar player and my bass player, they had sent me a bunch of riffs, and I said, "Hey, dude, take this riff, and put them together, add some drums to it, and send it back to me." And they did. And I said, "Okay, well, I'm going to sing here from here to here, and then Daryl's going to sing from here to here." And then we'll worry about the choruses when I get there.
Okay.
So Daryl didn't know what I was going to write, and he didn't know what, and I didn't know what he was going to write. We had no idea. So we get to the studio, and we just fucking took it from there. We're like, the music's done now, so now we're just singing to, you have from the mark of 110 to 140, and you have from 140 to 165. And that's how we did it. And we did the whole record like that, man. We didn't rehearse. We put music together as a band, and we'd send it to Daryl, and he would just say, "Okay, Daryl, you got to write from here to here and here to here," and that's how we did the entire album. And it was fucking cool, man. It was incredible. And then we got together and jammed it once. We're like, "Hey, let's go play the whole album at this club." And we're like, "Okay."
All right.
So we went to rehearsal once. We had one rehearsal in New York City and played the next night in Long Island. We played the album from beginning to end. We're like, yeah, this is all we got. And we played. We
that's it. One
yeah,
shot.
This and Tricky. And Walk This Way. That's what we did. I got to do the fucking Steven Tyler part and Walk This Way. And we're like, you did those two songs? And that was it. It was killer, man. Well, we did Carney from Generation Kill. We played Carney Love. And he fucking scats along with it while I'm singing it. It's killer, man. It
was, oh, my God.
And we had fun with, dude, the guy is an amazing, fun, really funny, really deep, and just fun guy to be around. And, it, you know, he's just he's just a really good human being. Like, it's somebody you want to be your friend because he's just such a nice guy. And he's talented, man. I mean, you know,
yeah,
you know,
no doubt.
I do like hip hop. I'm not a huge, you know, I like everything. So, but I love gangster rap, man. I love N.W.A., man. Always have. I love Dre. I love Eminem.
Got it.
You know, I wasn't a huge fan of Run DMC, you know, growing up, but I knew who. And I didn't hate it. I just,
right.
You know.
I loved him. I loved him.
But you know what? I knew all the songs.
Yeah, you did. Like, that's the big difference.
I knew all of them.
Absolutely.
Like, oh, fuck, I know that song. Yep. Yeah. Oh, fuck.
And you even know the dance move that went with that song.
Yeah. I went to see Cyndi Lauper a couple years ago, right?
Right.
And my buddy is her guitar tech.
Okay.
And so we were friends. So I was like, hey, man, I want to come to the show and see you and all that. He's like, well, come to the show and hang out. I'm like, eh. Can I just fucking come and hang out with you and then leave? And
like, do I have to sit through this?
So then my wife and I had a job at the time in New York, a part-time job, and I worked part-time at this small little company. And one of the guys there was a huge Cyndi Lauper fan and wife. So I said, well, can I get four passes, man? I'll bring this guy from work and his wife. So we did. I brought them. They were fucking ecstatic, man. It was
of course,
so rad.
It's an
anyway.
Opera.
So I stayed for the show, and what's weird is I sat in my seat, and every song she sang, I was like, "How come I know this fucking song? I've never bought one of her records ever."
Yep. Yep.
And I knew every fucking song.
And you were singing along, and you were swaying, and you were
time after time. I was standing right behind her. Right behind her. I was like 10 feet away from her, watching her.
And
I was on the side of the stage just standing there watching her. The rest of the show I watched from my seat. But then at the end, I went in and I watched Time After Time right for
you.
It
had
was
to.
Awesome.
And you had to remember. Killer. Remember when Time After Time, and I bet you anything, when you were standing behind her and you were watching her, you closed your eyes and you saw the video. You saw the little mobile home thing in the middle of the woods. You didn't?
No.
Okay, well, then it wasn't too. Okay, then, all right, you didn't go deep enough. All right, you didn't go deep enough.
But I did get her. I got a picture with her and I got her to throw the metal horns.
I
did do that.
Fantastic. Oh. Fantastic.
Yeah.
I am very thrilled for you. And I am thrilled about where you're going and what you've got going on, Rob. And I know that you're stepping into something different. And you know, and I can't tell you how much I totally appreciate you and sharing, you know, the information as far as the stuff that you were doing before, you know, till you got where you got to go. And you know, and ultimately, you know, it was about, you know, respect. It was about doing a good job. It was about making sure that you were, you know, you were on point, and because it was important to make sure that those guys that you were working for had a great show, and you took it into your own hands.
Well, yeah, when you're a tech, your whole job is to make sure. So when you're in the band, right, and so I've been on both sides of it. Mm-hmm. And it can be incredibly frustrating when things are going bad. Not only does it ruin the show, it takes away all your focus. It takes away the energy that you're supposed to be expelling for the people that paid for a ticket and who want to see a show and who you want them to walk away from the show going, God damn, those guys were fucking awesome.
Yep.
And when you walk up and your shit is fucked up, man, it ruins your day. It ruins your night. It ruins the show. It makes you angry. You end up yelling at the tech and you end up fucking. And
when it's everybody else's fault.
Your whole deal when you're a tech is to hand that guy the guitar and all he has to do is play. He doesn't have to think about nothing else.
Mm.
That's your job. And when that's your job, man, it's fucking, it's highly stressful. It was nerve-wracking.
Right.
You know, nothing worse than Billy Duffy yelling at me. And I wanted to punch him in the fucking face. I'm like, fuck you, man. That's not my fault. It wasn't my fault. But he fucking yelled at me like I was like a kid. And for a second, I was like, oh, man, I'm sorry. And I was like, that's not my fucking fault. Fuck you, man. You know what I mean? But you have to suck it up and you just go, oh, now I'm getting paid.
Yep.
Getting paid an enormous amount. I'm getting paid an enormous amount of money for, you know, for an hour and a half's worth of work or a couple hours worth of work. You know what I mean? So, but it, like I said, high stress. A lot going on. If you work for Rob Halford, the last thing you want his to do is his microphone being fucked up.
Oh my God!
You know what I mean?
You'd so be done.
There were like, and I always took it in stride when things were fucked up. Because I was a tech before being a singer, I understood and I just made the best of it. You know what I mean? I usually laughed about it or I fucking broke their balls after, but I never yelled at anyone. I yelled at one guy because he was a total dick about it, and I was like, dude, I was just fucking kidding, man. So I've been breaking your balls for fucking a year and a half. Now you're going to be upset, you fucking crybaby. and then it got worse. And so, yeah, but you know,
oh hell,
you know, it wasn't, okay. You know, and it wasn't even his fault. I was only joking. It was the amp blew up. The fucking head blew up. It wasn't his fault. You know what I mean? So
you're just
being a little sensitive. But that's what happens when you drink too much, and then you fucking go and you got to work all night, and you're in a hangover. And it's no fun.
No.
You know?
And that's why you shouldn't do that. That's exactly why you shouldn't do that.
No, you should not. You know, I mean, you got to limit yourself, and you got to take your. You know, I think the nights off were the best for the band. Like when we had, like if you have a couple show days, then you go, oh, we have a day off tomorrow, and that's when everyone would just let fucking loose, and I would fucking. And I'd bartend, man. I was fucking. I
yeah,
because
you had that under your belt too, so you were able to take care of them that way too. Nice.
Fuck yeah, man. I was bartend. I'd bartended the bus, man. I was fucking crazy. I was the last one. A lot of times I was the last one to go to bed at the party. I sharpied to many people who didn't make it to their bunk. You know,
I did.
I sharpied a lot of dicks on people's faces. Yeah.
Okay, so for those of you that are tuned in, okay, do not go to sleep on the bus with Rob Dukes and a sharpie.
No. Oh, man, me and Lee Altus, man, were the worst, man. We got some people good, man. We did this one bus driver who talked shit. Got drunk. He was so bad. We did the inside of his lips, his ears. We drew eyes on his eyelids, man. We fucking, his whole face was just black. He had a huge fucking dick on his chest. We got this guy so bad. I still have the pictures, man. They're on my Facebook page somewhere.
Oh, nice.
And one of the tour photos, man. It's just, we got this guy so bad. And we used to get Nick Barker all the time from fucking Stevie Borger. He's playing in Bulgaria now.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Drummer.
He was we used to get Nick constantly, man. Nick is my brother, man. He is.
You'd think he'd have learned.
Such a good dude. Huh?
You'd have think, you thought he, you would have thought he learned.
No, he didn't learn, man. He didn't learn ever. No, he didn't learn. one time, me and Peter from Hypocrisy and Nick were all in the back lounge listening to Black Sabbath, Volume 4. I'll never forget it. Cranking it. And Nick passed out. He drank half a bottle of absinthe. He goes, fuck you, faggots. And he just drank this fucking bottle of absinthe. And he passed out. So I got a blue Sharpie, and I fucking Sharpied half his face blue. And I drew pictures all over him like he was like a fucking caveman, like cave pictures all over his chest.
Oh, wow.
He had his shirt off, and I was like, fuck, he's huge. I'm just going to fucking... I did this whole, like, saying, and me and Peter are laughing and taking pictures. And then we got to this truck stop, and I woke him up. I was like, Nick, come on, let's go get something to eat. And he's like, oh, okay. And he fucking wakes up, and he has no idea. He's fucking Sharpied up.
I would be so mad at you.
And everyone's looking at him, and he's like, what the fuck? And then he finally sees himself, like, Dukes, you cocksucker. Yeah, man. He used to yell at me every morning. He would have to scrub that shit off his face. You know, like multiple times, I just hear him yelling at me, fucking into the dressing room. Ah, he was so great. What a good dude.
So you made the most of it.
Yeah, man.
You rock. You know, Rob. Thank you. I could spend the rest of the show on here with you, but I'm gonna have to go ahead and go and at least play a couple more tunes.
I cannot
believe all the stuff that you've shared with me. You've been so cool about it, and I just want you to know that you've become like one of the coolest dudes that I'm gonna start like totally following, because I want to know what you're reading, I want to know what you're looking at. I want to know what you're listening to, because I want to know what you're thinking. And, you know, and now, and I see, I got your number now too. So I'm just going to flat out. I'm just going to flat just text you.
All right.
Like, man, dude. So, all right. I've read this book because you thought it was a good idea, and I want to know why. I'm going to have start having conversations.
I would start off. Have you ever read, what's my favorite book? Have you read any kind of like classic stuff? Have you ever read classic books?
Yeah.
Like a really good classic book. It's for the language and for the visions that it puts through like your eyes. You know, there's nothing better than watching like a movie. Like, you know what I mean? But like,
right.
There's certain books that are just so good at the imagery that it puts in your head as you're reading along.
Okay.
And Moby Dick is one of my favorites. Moby Dick is such an incredible story, and the imagery, but it's also written, you know, a long time ago. So the language is so crisp and so precise.
And so different. Yep. Absolutely.
It's just awesome. It's just such a good book. I've read that book, I don't know, maybe 50, 60 times, man. I mean, it's just one of those books. I don't ever get sick of reading it again.
I'm glad,
Road Warrior. I watch it over and over and over. And Star Wars, I watch it more. I've seen Star Wars 1,000 times. Jaws like 10,000 times. It's one of those things for me. Like that book is pretty incredible. And there's another book called the Necroscope series, which is by Brian Lumley.
Okay.
There's 14 books. It's a story, and he's just killer, man. He's just great. Actually, I'm reading it again now. I'm on book 3. I've been reading it for a couple days.
Okay.
I'm reading the whole series again just because I just want to.
That's perfect.
I want to read it again. I'm like, oh, I want to read that story again.
There it is. Well, now I've got some stuff to follow up on.
So, you know what, dude? Do me a favor.
What's up?
Text me your email again.
Okay.
And I'll send you a couple more songs.
You need to.
And we'll stay in touch.
Yes, right. we're going to, you know, because I have a feeling that you and I are going to talk again soon. We're going to talk again. Rob, honey, thank you so much for all the time you've given me.
No problem.
We'll talk again, baby.
Okay.
All right, baby. Bye.
Bye.
The proceeding was produced by Pirate Radio Studios Incorporated and originally aired live on Radio Memphis. Any offers or advertisement contained may not still be valid. All rights are reserved, and copyright is held by Pirate Radio Studios Incorporated, Memphis, Tennessee. For more, look for all the RMOD players at radio-memphis.com.